This is Main Street Weekend on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Thank you for joining us for our broadcast and online Main Street all across North Dakota this Sunday morning. And this morning, our show will feature discussions from the past week. The first is with the new owner of one of the most famous watering holes in the region, the Blue Rider Bar in downtown Minot. Another is with Tucker Lucas, the director of a timely play about politics at Theater B. The show will be live streamed and available anywhere. Then Mark Trahant will offer a commentary from the Native American perspective. First, we'll get an update from our news director, Dave Thompson.
While acknowledging the rising number of infections, people in hospitals, and deaths, Governor Burgum is urging people to use common sense and to practice methods of helping slow the COVID virus at all times. At his Bismarck briefing, Burgum said he thinks many people are just letting their guard down in certain settings.
We eliminate gathering in public spaces and at work or at bars. If you eliminate all that, but everybody decides to gather at house parties or private social gatherings, if you do that, then we're just moving the maskless transmission moment to another location.
Burgum did say he's optimistic that a vaccine will be coming very soon. Meanwhile, Burgum elevated the COVID-19 risk levels for some counties across the state. 14 counties were raised from low to moderate risk. 8 counties go from moderate to high risk. The other counties are staying where they are.
The virus doesn't recognize the county lines. We think that there's these are good for setting kind of regional guidelines around the state. But at the point we are right now with the level of cases we have, the level of positivity we have, the level of hospitalization we have statewide, that we need to, as we all sort of are in this together, that no county in the state will have a designation lower than yellow.
But Burgum says no counties are going to be moved into the highest category, critical or red, either. With a Thanksgiving weekend just 3 weeks away, UND and NDSU are urging students to avoid travel and to stay on campus. Here is UND President Andrew Armacost.
We have a phrase here, lay low before you go. So if you do go for 14 days in advance, take it easy. Don't do anything that will infect you and make sure that you test before you go home should you decide to do that.
Armacost asked parents to make sure smart decisions are being made during the holidays for the campus, the community, and their families. A statement from University President Dean Brashani at NDSU said traveling and attending family gatherings will be a sure way of spreading the virus, especially to older, more vulnerable family members. NDSU says residence halls will remain open over the break at no added cost to students. The director of North Dakota's Human Services Department says when hospitals report the number of beds available for COVID patients, that's just at a point in time. And it doesn't tell the entire story.
It's not like Expedia, do you have a bed available?
Chris Jones says hospitals are complex places with a number of admissions and discharges. He says a more accurate indicator of bed availability is in the number of staffed beds, because staffing has become a real issue.
There's not only an increase in overall admissions, but also because healthcare workers needing to isolate and quarantine due to the nature of their work, but also due to local community spread. Finally, there are increased hospitalizations all across the country, so there is no extra staff to bring in.
Jones says the state's emergency commission set aside $10 million to recruit staff. But he said the way things are, hospital capacity can only be improved through these factors.
Reduce community spread by communities following smart restart guidelines. Additionally, individuals need to continue to seek regular routine outpatient care, because if you are not receiving your regular care, you are coming into the hospital and taking up a bed potentially. Please seek your regular routine care. And finally, the main lever that hospitals have to pull is to again reduce urgent, non-emergent services in hospitals, such as elective surgeries.
Grand Forks Mayor Brandon Bolshensky has signed an emergency order to temporarily require all bars, bar restaurants, and off sale in town to close at 11 p.m. each day. Bolshensky said it's a step to limit crowds in high exposure environments to slow the spread of COVID-19. Bolshensky has also asked East Grand Forks to do the same thing. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused more people to buy goods online. Harvest Public Media's Seth Bodine reports how the increase in packages is affecting rural postal workers.
The increase in packages has been good for the Postal Service, which will make it possible to stay financially afloat until about September next year. Ronnie Stutz is the president of the National Rural Letter Carriers Association. With many rural letter carriers still on leave and the increase in mail, he says it's put a strain on employees.
So right now we've got offices that are just very short bodies, and it's really created a stress on the people that are working. They're working a lot more hours. They're splitting routes, staying out on the street sometimes 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Stutz says the National Rural Letter Carriers Association recently signed an agreement with the Postal Service to hire temporary assistant rural carriers to help during the holiday season, when mail usually doubles or triples. Seth Bodine, Harvest Public Media.
The general manager of Bismarck-based Basin Electric Power Cooperative says 2020 has been a challenging year. Paul Sukut told the Basin Annual Meeting the COVID-19 pandemic took its toll.
You know, we immediately saw the fall in prices, as everybody did, and that meant natural gas, that meant oil, some of the acrylics and the chemicals that are produced at the Sinfluence plant. We immediately saw a drop in our loads, particularly up in the Bakken, as much as 400 megawatts load drop.
But Sukut said that load is coming back slowly.
Now they're back to probably where they were prior to COVID coming along, but I really think that you're probably going to see more of a slow growth or a slower growth in terms of what comes on in the coming months and maybe in 2021.
Sukut says Basin had to cut its budget by about $3 million. But Sukut said efficiencies have meant the co-op is still operating under budget. For Main Street Weekend, I'm Dave Thompson.
Stuck at home? Well, there's always the radio. Still have one, right? Well, dust it off and turn it on. No matter where you are in North Dakota, Northwest Minnesota, or Eastern Montana, there's always a Prairie Public Radio signal to tune in. Or you can open a smartphone app, listen to one of our web streams at prairiepublic.org, or even better, you can enable a smart speaker and tell it to play NPR or Prairie Public. We've got all the news programming and vital information you need to stay on top of what's keeping many of us inside, plus a bevy of excellent programs to help you keep your mind off of it for a little bit. And on that note, we have two of the best music hosts in the business. Scott Prebis plays the beautiful classical music, and Mike Olson takes you on a sonic roots, rock, and jazz adventure every weekday. We will all get through this together, even if we can't be around each other so much. So, we invite you to listen to Prairie Public, your stay-at-home radio station.
You're listening to Main Street Weekend on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Ashley Thornburg traveled to Minot last week to appear on a local online comedy show and to take the opportunity to remind Prairie Public's listeners that after a drawn-out process, our Minot transmitter is reliably back online. While she was there, Ashley sat down with some of the people who make the Magic City an important economic and cultural resource in that part of our state. The Blue Rider Bar is one of Minot's best-known attractions. Its name is linked to famous abstract painters, including the artist who started the bar, Walter Peel, and the painting on one of its walls by the late Fritz Scholder. Here's Ashley's conversation with the new owner, Terry Peterson.
Terry, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for stopping by my bar.
What made you want to buy the Blue Rider?
It was my favorite bar, and it was for sale. You know, I've always had like a side hustle going. This was an interesting one. There's a family connection there, and it was my favorite bar, and I thought, if I could make it work, then let's give it a go. That's really where it came from.
Favorite bar. How long you been coming here? What's it like?
I came here the first time in college because it was the only smoke-free bar in North Dakota, and I was going to school at Minot State, so I'd come here to hang out, and then I didn't, moved away. But then I ended up getting a job 16 years ago at a nonprofit 3 blocks up the street. So it became a kind of an after work venue. Stop for 1, 2, and then head home. So I suppose for the past 15, 16 years, it it's been a little more consistent and just popping in, you know, once or twice a week, mm-hmm. meeting the people and knowing the people.
Yeah, what is it about the specifics of this one?
Probably just the full-on acceptance of anybody. Anyone can come in and feel comfortable. It's rare to have that now, I think. Anytime you could have a sanctuary for some of the people who may otherwise not have a place, then I think it's important to keep it that way.
You bought the bar during COVID.
Pretty smart move, right?
Oh, yeah. Great idea.
Yeah, that was a curveball. Walt and I had talked about me purchasing the bar, and for a few months before we actually signed, and I was getting financing together and things like that. We signed in April. I forget when the bars were shut down or mandated to shut down, but it was after we signed and before we closed. So threw a wrench into things, but I guess it is what it is. And I've never done this before, so it's really, I really know no difference, right? So owning a bar during COVID is, that's all I know.
You might keep up the masks and, yeah. and stuff, you know, just
yeah,
make
maybe,
it part
maybe,
of the blue.
Maybe it's a thing.
Just paint a mask onto the blue right? rider outside.
Yeah. Onto all the cowboys and horses.
You say Walt so casually, but that's Walter Peel to the rest of us, the Walter Peel, a North Dakota icon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was one of his babies.
Growing up, it was always Uncle Walt. My mom's maiden name is Peel. Her dad, so my grandfather, his brother is Walter's dad. So my grandfather, Howard, he had a brother, Walter, whose son is Walter Jr., of course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were cousins once removed then, Walt and I? Something
oh,
like that.
Oh, I don't that. Know what the, yeah.
I'm pretty
I'm
sure
I'm just
going right.
to believe you. I'm not even going to fact check that
right.
one.
I'm pretty sure. So there's that connection as well. And growing up, it wasn't a North Dakota icon. It was Uncle Walt. And he showed up at weddings and, you know, always gifted a painting of some sort. And that was just the way it was for me growing up. So
yeah. Do you remember when you kind of first got a sense that he's famous?
Yeah, 100% actually. I was in seventh grade. We were doing a project where all the students wrote to famous people for autographs. And I thought, well, I'll just write to Walt because I'm sure I'll get something back. And I didn't. And right?
Well, that's even better.
Until like a few months, yeah, I totally missed that assignment. But a few months later, he showed up and gave me a framed sketch.
No.
Which he felt really bad because I think the letter got, I don't know. And if you've ever seen a studio, you know, he could have lost that letter, no problem. I remember that. And actually, I held on to that, of course, since 94. I want to say 1994, when I bought the bar, I was able to find a spot on this wall for it. So, and it fit right in there. And it's a pretty cool piece. It's like signed, you know, to Cousin Terry and ripped out of a sketchbook. But I think that was about the time where I was like, oh, other people know my relative.
You just referenced this wall and you pointed to an entire wall of art. And we have to start with the obvious one.
Yeah.
So we are sitting in front of a painting called The Blue Rider, and this is a Fritz Scholder. It is actually painted on the walls here. It's under plexiglass. How much do you know about the story of how this painting came to be?
I don't know enough as I should. I know that Fritz was a bit of a mentor to Walt, and I think Walt was impressed with his art and kind of fashioned himself a little bit after Fritz, and they became friends. And after Walt bought the bar, Fritz came in and painted that on the wall. Since Fritz has passed away, and you know, it's become, I suppose, for this bar in downtown Minot, sort of a bit of a iconic thing. People like to take pictures in front of it and such. But it's a special piece. It's part of the bar, literally, now. So that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I mean, technically, you don't own this part of the bar. Okay, you're going to have to explain that to me. This is painted on the wall. You own this building.
Correct.
But you don't own this painting. How does that work?
You'd have to ask the lawyers how that works. I it's something that I don't think going in, Walt and I will never, we agree on everything, but I think just to keep things cool and all, getting legal language behind everything, he wanted to make sure that he held on to the ownership of the Fritz, which completely understand. Also, him owning that section of the wall probably allowed me to buy the building.
Because, probably knocked the price down a little chunk there.
Yeah, it was a win-win.
Are you going to tell me what this painting is worth?
I couldn't tell you. I'm not a art appraiser.
Okay, can you tell me what the building would have cost with the painting and what it did cost?
I can tell you that I could not have gotten financing for this building had I owned that section of wall.
Okay. So Walter Peel owns this section of the wall?
Yes. If he were so inclined, he could come cut that piece of wall out.
Fascinating. If that happens, will you call me? I want to be here for that.
Okay. I hope it never comes to that.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it won't, but I've never heard of that. Like, whatever they said, he just owns, a quarter inch deep into the drywall?
Yeah, and half, I believe half, it says in half, the,
well, it's very
in
specific.
The language.
Okay.
I got through a couple pages of the lawyer stuff, and I was like, I think this looks good. I'll sign it.
Wow. What do you think of that painting?
It's great. I think it fits the bar perfectly. I mean, we're here at the Blue Rider. It's a Blue Rider, so.
Yeah.
I love it.
What does it mean?
I don't know. What, Blue Rider?
Yeah.
Or just the painting?
The name, the painting.
The name?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any mistakes in art. You can interpret it however you want. The namesake, though, of the Blue Rider came from 20th century Impressionist movement, German Impressionist movement, Der Blau writers. So that's where another inspiration of Walt's from back in the day was that interpretive movement. So that's sort of where the name came from. And then, of course, I think Fritz drew inspiration on that for the painting.
Well, also on the wall, I'm seeing Arvin Davis. He owns the Little Red Liar studio in town.
Yes.
I know that Sean Ann Tangney, who is heavily involved with the Good Night Live show, her shoes are hanging on the wall. There is a box on the wall with a man's ashes. He was a local musician. So this wall, it kind of belongs to Minot, doesn't it?
It's always going to be local artists, local stories, originals when we can. Some things move every once in a while, but it needs to be a special piece to make it. Had this wall not been included in the sale, I don't think I would have bought the Rider, because it's an essential piece of what the Rider is.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to keep the Rider the Rider. And without this wall, it isn't.
So it is an icon, of course, but it's also yours now. Are you also trying to make it Terry Peterson's bar?
Man, maybe accidentally. There were some things that needed to change when I purchased the bar. A lot of those were systems related. Installing a walk-in, the tap system, versus, using bottles mainly. The bar itself needed to change a bit. So the back wall of the bar needed to change. Some refrigeration changes. Again, addition of a POS.
Is that a purchase operating system, or what's a POS?
Point of sale.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, up until I purchased the bar, it was cash only. So having that POS, you know.
Who even uses cash anymore?
Right? Well, if you came here, you.
You did, okay.
But now, yeah, you can take card and having that inventory accountability behind that system. I mean, these are all things in place because or changes that needed to be in place, I think, just from a business, more of a business standpoint.
Yeah, that's logistics. Yeah, let's talk personality here.
Yeah, well, some of those came with the need to change the aesthetics, and I tried to take as much care as I could with if I needed to change something in the bar that I did it, true to what the rider was. Mm. The back wall art piece is actually an original from the 20s of a gallery showing from Der Blau Riders. I think it was a German museum that the showing was at. So, you know, certain things when I saw it, I was like, that fits, right? So I'd pick up something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, I really tried to keep it pretty much the same. There may be more Star Wars in here.
I was going to say, I think the Star Wars might be a newer element here. Well,
technically speaking, that's also a function of just the system changes. The cabinets above the back wall bar used to be just full of cans and bottles, right? They had hundreds of different bottle selections.
Mm.
So when I moved to more keg and tap focused, I had a bunch of empty cabinets to fill.
Uh-huh.
So I reached for the, you know,
I got this.
Yeah. So I reached for the Star Wars stuff because that's what I had. And I thought it was, you know, at least quirky enough and it'd work here. So, and then the Han Solo piece actually is an original, an artist downtown here, Eric Hansen, came in here one day and saw the Star Wars figures, vintage Star Wars figures in the cabinet, and said, "I've got a piece for you," and so he brought that over actually the next day.
What is it about Star Wars?
Oh man, I don't know. Good question. I've always just been into sci-fi, I guess, and the collecting piece kind of came later, but as a kid that was into collecting baseball cards and things like that, now maybe collecting some vintage Star Wars stuff, it just kind of fit with me. And so, yeah, instead of sitting in a box somewhere, now they're at least on display.
How much more is there to bartending than meets the eye?
Oh, here?
Yeah.
The actual function, what you're doing to get that product to the customer is pretty simple. What people forget is that, you know, anyone can go to an off-sale place and get a beer and go home and drink it for one-fifth the price, you know, at a bar. So what are we actually selling here? And your bartenders become that point of socialness that people are wanting, right? They're the, along with other customers, they're sort of the directors of that social commodity that you're selling, because we're not selling beer. We're selling more of that X factor, that intangible, that social aspect. So again, with COVID, it's made that difficult with reduced capacity and missing some people because they don't want to go out. So getting creative in like including as many people as possible and really pushing bartenders to just interact. That's like the side that people don't see. That is so important.
Yeah, you're part best friend, you're part counselor sometimes.
Oh, yeah. and if you don't want to be, you know, you have to be, because that's part of it.
Yeah. You said reduced capacity, and already I'm thinking there can't be more than 40 people that would fit in here. That seems pretty tight to me. What's the non-COVID max capacity?
Well, we have inside 30, outside 20. Okay. So we're at a little more than that, actually. 52 is like total capacity. But when you're looking inside, and we used to have at least 4 tables along this wall. So I've taken that out. You're right, 40 people in here would be pretty jimmied, right? So we try to limit it to 20 right now, which hasn't been a problem. For, you know,
a lot of people aren't wanting to go
right
out.
So and I don't want to put people in a position where they don't feel safe. Blue Rider was the first bar in North Dakota who went smoke free because of
they were way ahead.
Yeah, way back, right? health and safety concerns. And now we have another health and safety concern with the COVID and the masks. And so we were the first ones to mandate masks, not just for employees, but for customers as well, here in Minot. We also have the plexi up for the bartenders because their safety is, you know, number one. I wouldn't want to make someone work in an environment that I wouldn't feel safe working at. I think we're there right now, and I think it's probably going to, we're probably going to have to put more things in place. But yeah, I think the mask mandate thing was again true to what the rider has stood for.
Financially, are you doing okay? COVID's a weird time. I mean, they always say that vice is recession proof, and you could make some arguments that alcohol can be a vice.
Right. You know, I made the mortgage payment. That being said, being dead honest with you, I've never done this before.
Hmm.
I think we're okay. My CPA, you know, we have meetings, and he's pretty okay. Chill. So
yeah,
as long as he's not calling me with some urgent thing, I think we're okay. It has been tougher the last month especially, but...
Because you're going into that no patio season.
Yep, the patio is a big draw here. And when you're looking at that being, you know, 80% of your capacity, the winter is going to be interesting.
Do you feel like the state is doing a good job taking care of small businesses, local businesses?
I don't know. Again, this is my first kind of foray into it, so I have no idea what they did before. I think that there was some problems with the ERG grant rollout. Those monies were allocated more towards maybe not small business, or maybe the smaller businesses didn't quite get the help they needed in application for that. I'm always watching for the reallocation of the CARES dollars and seeing what we can maybe go for, but they're in a tough spot too. This is unprecedented, and I think there's people there with the best intentions. I hope that it can get down to the smaller businesses more, but again, I've never owned a business before, so this is new.
Yeah, new to you and in an unprecedented time, so this is probably an unfair question, but what's next?
I don't know. I enjoy the bar. I enjoy this as a side hustle. I think it is important to keep the rider here and solvent and open, and I'm going to do my best to see that through, especially through the COVID thing. My hope is that once things go back to normal, if they do, then I can step away a little more. But right now, it's my responsibility to maybe keep the doors open and the lights on. And so I'm going to work hard to make that a reality.
Terry, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for stopping in.
Main Street's Ashley Thornburg talking with the owner of Minot's well-known Blue Rider Bar, Terry Peterson.
Today's programming is made possible in part by Paul Schauer, in honor of his son Eric Schauer's 28th birthday. Happy birthday, Eric. On the Great American Folk Show, we have a platform of giving credit where credit is long overdue.
Mississippi John Hurt or Elizabeth Cotton, their styles were co-opted and commercialized by white artists and musicians.
Of being a vehicle for lunar poetry.
She was the color of the moon. She held the harp at her side and moved one hand now and again in slow arpeggios.
Music's existential power.
They chime, you know, like a little lute. That built-in mechanism that wants to take me out of my body.
And its power of persuasion.
Learning about Yiddish language, protest music, and folk music, I was actually able to write about in a story for No Depression.
Not at my lowest.
So vote with your ears and hear our candidates, singer-songwriters Grant Lee Phillips, Trey Burt, Sebastian Steinberg, and Sophia Wolfson, along with No Depression editor Hillary Saunders and our very own host Tom Brousseau. It's the Great American Folk Show, today at 5 p.m. Central on Prairie Public.
Don't tell me your position, I don't need no sympathy, yeah, your bleeding heart's complicit, you ain't in the street.
This is Main Street Weekend on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. On Friday, a new production from Theater B was live-streamed to theatergoers anywhere in the world. The majority, is a timely play about politics from playwright Rob Drummond. Theater B couldn't seat an audience due to pandemic guidelines, but director Tucker Lucas says this production will be more than a static camera shot of a stage, and ticket holders will even be able to affect the outcome of the show.
You know, 2020 is a pretty crazy year, right? And we're all dealing with this pandemic going on. And at Theater B, we were going, what's a way we could produce theater in as safe a way as possible? And we thought, well, you know, you have as few people in the room as possible. And to do that, you have a one-person show. So we were looking for something that we could do that was not only, you know, as COVID safe as we could make it, but also actually had something to do with the times we're in right now. And someone connected to our company found this play and handed it to us. And we read it and we said, we got to do it. We got to do this show because it's about the fairness / unfairness of elections and what it's like to be the winners and the losers in elections. And we also knew that the script was one that we could do as a live stream on the internet. So part of our COVID safety reasoning was that, hey, listen, you know, if we can only have a few people in the room of the cast itself, you know, there's a chance we'll never even be able to have a live audience in the room. You know, we're still waiting to see on that. You know, we follow the state of Minnesota's guidelines on how to do that. But because of that, we designed the show to be catered to a streaming audience. So the vast majority of our audience is going to be people sitting in the safety and comfort of their homes, watching from home. We've designed the show for them. And then because we have this thing in the show that's interactive where you can actually vote using any internet enabled device with a web browser like a computer or a phone, the audience will actually be able to interact with the show as they watch it.
Wow. So they will affect the outcome of the show?
There's a section towards the end where, yeah, you have a direct impact on exactly what happens in the show. A lot of the questions are polling the audience's opinion to find out if you agree or disagree with certain propositions that get put forth. But you actually have an effect, Doug, on whether or not you get to have a bathroom break, believe it or not.
Well, my hand's already raised. Well, the blurb from Theater B about The Majority, which is by playwright Rob Drummond, is that it's a smart, funny reflection on the imperatives and imperfections of democracy. The principles sound great, but they're so messy in practice. And so this particular play by Rob Drummond, I did a little bit of research here, was written about the time that the Scottish independence referendum was going on back in 2014. So he was interested in that political debate and discussion. Is the play as written? Does it have that component of how the audience can affect the outcome?
Yeah. That was his part of what he was doing at the very beginning. It's to the core of the message of the play itself. Because the play does not focus specifically on any particular political ideology, it's not trying to target any particular group. It's not trying to make any particular statement about any particular topic. It's really more of a reflection on political culture itself and how when we get caught in the throes of it, how if we're not careful, things can become pretty toxic. So yeah, it's set against the backdrop. It starts in 2014, right after that, the Scottish independence referendum happened. And it actually spans the time through to 2016 in the election of Donald Trump. So it covers a period of time where you follow our lead character, Robbie Drummond, played by Claire Lynch, another ensemble member of the company, as she kind of starts the play. She's not apolitical. It's not a play about, hey, aren't politics gross and dumb? She's someone who is definitely unactivated, so to speak, uninvolved. And she is tasked with writing a play about that Scottish vote referendum and along the way meets some really, really interesting characters that take her down a pretty interesting path.
So this is a one-person show.
Yep.
And how are the other characters presented?
So that's one of my favorite things about one person shows is that not only do all the sets almost and every setting and every place and every feeling comes from the actor, every character comes from the actor too. And Claire does a fantastic job. I can't remember the exact number. I'd estimate she probably plays roughly 10 characters in this show, uh-huh, including the lead. And because it's a play that's set in Europe, it's set in Scotland. So typically, if you were to see it, you know, originally performed, it would be in a Scottish accent. But what we opted to do is instead is we reserve accents, Scottish and British, for when she's playing other characters. And then when she's playing just herself, she's speaking in her Northern Midwestern accent. And then she does some other body work, too, and does a pretty good job of it.
Now, the show, The Majority, is running October 30th through November 14th. So it's around the election, arguably one of the biggest, most talked about elections in my lifetime.
Yep.
But this is a shorter run than usual for Theater B. Why?
You know, it's anytime you're deciding the length of a run, there's all sorts of factors that go into it. When we do longer runs, which are, you know, a typical Theater B show is either 4 weekends or 5 weekends. And one of the pieces of that calculus is that you can only fit so many people in a room. Right. So we can only physically in our space, I think we seat a little over 100. So we're really limited as to how many audience members we can even give an opportunity to come see the show. So we have to add more performances to give more people opportunities. In this scenario, because we're streaming, we're not really limited by that space of it. We also didn't want to do anything less than three because, you know, Doug, you know this, you know, obviously a show is ready when it opens, but shows morph and change during their run as well. And we didn't want to just do one weekend and not let the show breathe and change over time. And not only that, but be influenced by the election. I mean, we open this upcoming weekend and the election is happening right after that. So that's one of the things that enticed us about doing this play at this time was that it's sort of a wait and see of how is the audience going to take this show before the election versus after the election. And there's so many different ways that could shake out. It's kind of this fun experiment that we're doing.
Tucker Lucas is the director of The Majority. He's an ensemble member at Theater B. Some theaters are basically recording theatrical presentations and then streaming them online. You are actually going to live stream this. Why that?
For starters, my background outside of theater is in video and film production. I've been working in video production for at least 15 years. And when we knew we wanted to stream it, and when I was privileged with the task of directing the show, I thought, well, I'm going to use that background and I'm not just going to, let's not do this. I mean, earlier this year, when we all first locked down, Theater B did a series of Zoom performances that were awesome and a lot of fun. But I wanted to do something that was different than that. We also wanted to preserve as much of the theatrical experience as possible, right? And that's live. And so we opted to do something that's live just because that is part of what it is to be part of a live theater experience. You know, every performance is going to be different. And then on top of that, you know, it's everything is different with every rights holder of every piece. And because we're now in this era of COVID where more theaters are looking to do stuff online, I think everyone is figuring out, you know, how do things like that work now that we're dealing with streaming audiences where you could have people all over the world tuning in and, you know, there's rules about recordings and stuff like that. So we got to be cognizant of that, too. So in that direction, then, we really aim to design a show that sort of straddles the middle of what it is to be a play and what it is to be a TV show, right? So it's primarily a one-camera show that's moving about on a track. It's not like a multi-camera setup that's all fancy schmancy and we're cutting between stuff. And it's also not just like a Zoom call. It's not Claire in front of a MacBook Pro. I think we were able to figure out something that was sort of a mesh between the two. So when you watch the show, yeah, you're sitting at home instead of in the theater and you're watching it on the internet, but you're going to get the feeling of watching live theater because that's exactly what's going on.
Usually a director is, you know, there for rehearsals and then there for moral support when the curtain goes up. But are you actually working the show then?
Yep, I'm the camera operator. So all the camera moves you see going on, that's me doing that. That was another thing when we were going, what do we need to do to make our production as COVID safe as possible? That means as few people in the room as possible. And that means a lot of people are wearing multiple hats. So our crew has been pretty small. but they've been absolutely awesome. I should give them a shout out real quick if I can, Doug. Jake Hartsey's our assistant director. Leah Vogel's our stage manager. Obviously, I said Claire Lynch is our performer. David Huebner is our streaming engineer. Brian Lynch is our set designer. And then I've been handling a lot of just the video production aspects of it. So we've been able to keep it not even a skeleton crew, more of a bone marrow crew.
We're talking about The Majority, which will open soon at Theater B. It opens on October 30th, runs through November 14th. You can find out about tickets at theaterb.org. That is important because, Tucker, you mentioned you're streaming this live, which means that people buy tickets for a particular evening.
Correct. Yeah. So you get a ticket and then I believe I'll have to check in, but I believe the procedure is you get an email with a specific link that day. And that's the link that you tune into. And then you can use any internet enabled device that has a web browser like Chrome or Firefox or Safari. So you can then go to theaterb.org/vote and you'll be able to vote on all the propositions that happen during the show.
Typically, there are accommodations for an audience. You have some sort of a set and lighting scheme. How about for this show?
We've got a full set. Brian Lynch, our set designer, did a phenomenal job. And it's got a green screen built into the center of it. So we're actually doing, you know, if you typical watch the weather and you're wondering how's that weather person getting the background they've got. Well, they're standing in front of a green screen, which they're keying out, and we're doing the same thing. And so we're throwing all sorts of graphics up. You know, as we go forward, Doug, and as we continue to review just the landscape of COVID and whether or not the guidelines in Minnesota allow us to have a live audience, in the event that we can have a live audience that comes in, obviously everyone would have to be socially distanced, we'd be masked up, and we'd be following protocols. But if you were someone who had the opportunity to do that, you would also be getting a different experience than what the people streaming at home are getting. I liken it to like almost like attending a taping of The Late Show or something, where you're seeing all the production people, you're seeing the green screen, you're seeing the buttons being pushed and everything else going on. So, you know, if that opportunity arises, we'll let people know about it. It's gonna be pretty cool.
Let's talk about Theater B's pandemic season, because this has been disruptive to every live performance venue, Theater B included. You're programming in spite of COVID-19. What is the ensemble talking about now? What's next? How do you plan ahead when you don't have a vaccine yet? We have social distancing, people are wearing masks, etc.
At B, we always have a number of projects, you know, sort of on the back burner that we're figuring out when we can kick them off. We had to, when COVID hit in March, we had to cancel the last show of our last season, The Father, which was going to be a fantastic, fantastic show. And then our plans for this season got, you know, totally thrown out the window as well. So really what we do is we just go, listen, we don't know how long this is going to be going on for, but we know it's not forever. And, honestly, producing theater is a inherently optimistic venture. And so you really do have to have optimism when you go into it. So the art that we want to make, we're going to continue to look for ways to make it. And so part of doing The Majority is, hey, let's see how this works, right? Let's see what it's like for us. We've never done a show like this before, ever, nothing even close to it. So if we can have some success with this, and if we can learn some really cool lessons from this, this could help us produce more art like this while we're all locked down. But in the meantime, you know, we love live theater. We love in-person theater. So we're just looking forward to the day when we can all get back together and start to produce that art together again. In the meantime, we'll bide our time and stay connected, talk to each other, show each other love and support, and talk about the art we want to make.
And because you will be live streaming this production of The Majority, it's not limited to people who can drive to the theater. It anybody anywhere can buy a ticket and watch it.
We love that about that. That's something that's we've never really dealt with before. So looking forward to see what the audience thinks.
When you were looking at The Majority, were you looking at rights to stream? Did you have to negotiate that with them? And is that the kind of process you'll be going through for, you know, the foreseeable future as we work our way through a pandemic?
This is what everyone's doing right now, right? Is we're still waiting on the selection. We're waiting on vaccines for a pandemic. So much of it is wait and see. So we basically have plans A through E that we could probably fall back on depending on which scenario, but it's really tough to tell which scenario is going to be playing out anytime soon. When it comes to rights, yeah, I mean, that's Rob Drummond and his agency, they've been really great to work with. They were really cool with us at the outset. We got permission to stream and had to negotiate that into the rights. And that is probably going to become more of a standard thing now going forward, right? In a post-COVID world where more organizations may opt to do things like this more often, depending on the reasoning. So it's still new territory. I think everyone's still figuring it out. And it's actually really cool to be a part of that, you know?
You suggested that online may persist after the pandemic as another way to get it out there.
No matter what, there's going to be more streaming in general being implemented into how organizations, especially theaters, produce their content. And that could really be an economic choice, Doug, as we go forward, too, because, you know, you've been in the theater for a very long time. You know this as well as I do. If you want to make a lot of money, don't start a theater. You know, like that's not, and one of the reasons why that is because you are just limited to how many people you can actually bring into the room with you, right? You can't really, there's only so much you can do to reach a larger mass audience. So it's possible. Nonprofit theaters, which we are one, we've all always struggled to keep the lights on. It's just something that, it's because we're passionate about this thing that we do that we keep doing it. So I could absolutely see organizations going forward adopting things like this if it proves that it's a viable means of reaching a larger audience. So I guess we'll see.
The show is opening Friday. It runs for 2 weekends. It's called The Majority. It's by Rob Drummond. And we've been talking with the director. That's Tucker Lucas. Tucker, all the best. And Holzenbeinbruch, I guess, which is the German way of saying break your leg in your neck, which is good luck on the theater.
Thanks, Doug, and I'll see you soon.
All right.
What if the real political divide in our country isn't about right and left? What if it's between those who care intensely about politics and those who don't?
People don't seem to dislike somebody just for being a member of the other side. They're concerned that somebody is going to talk to them about politics.
Reimagining the political divide in the U.S. this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
Monday at 8 Central, 7 Mountain.
The other day I took a trip to the drugstore, and this experience that ordinarily would be so ordinary was a little scary. So many parts of our lives have changed, but when I got back in the car, one thing remained the same. I was able to turn on NPR News. Stay connected each weekday by tuning into the program that keeps up with events and is there for you. Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, weekdays beginning at 4 a.m. Central, 3 Mountain on Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Mark Trahant is the editor of the online news service Indian Country Today. He's a member of Idaho Shoshone Bannock Tribe, and he comments on Native American issues in his blog, Trahant Reports. Today, his subject is political advertising from a Native perspective.
This election, nearly 5 million ads have aired in federal races, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, on broadcast and national cable television since January 2019. According to the Wesleyan Media Project. It tracks ad spending. The volume is more than twice that of the cycles in 2016 and 2012. For Native American candidates, there are special challenges. Representative Punkaway Victors, a state House member in Kansas, examined Native American women running for state legislatures across the country in her doctoral dissertation at Creighton University. Her paper, Wauhanga, The Rise of Native American Women Who Pursue Elected State Office. One of the candidates she interviewed told her, "My family and I actually went into debt when I ran for office. I used my personal money to pay for campaign ads, mailers, and radio ads. I think that is what got me elected, is people seeing me on TV and hearing my voice on the radio. However, it was a big price to pay, and it put a financial hardship on my family." That captures the challenge for Native American candidates for public office: raising the money to tell their story, especially on the expensive medium of television. Yet the campaign ads by Native Americans have been growing and telling more nuanced stories. 2 years ago, a social media ad was in Lakota. Tetuan Means, who was then a candidate for attorney general in South Dakota. This is how minds are changed, a spot that portrays a Native woman in a professional light. Both Representatives Deb Haaland, Laguna Pueblo, and Charisse Davids, Ho-Chunk, effectively used campaign commercials to define themselves and their worldview. Now, of course, both Davids and Haaland are incumbents, and there is a different strategy in the works. Davids is running in a competitive district, and she uses her commercials to reinforce her policy messages. Pricing, medication, surprise bills, coronavirus, I've heard these and 10,000 other healthcare worries from Kansans. Literally 10,000, Davids says. That's why healthcare has been my focus. Paulette Jordan, Coeur d'Alene, is running for the U.S. Senate in Idaho. Her most recent television ad is another telling of a Western narrative. It's like a lot of Idaho towns, where good people have been left behind by the elites who control politics, she says. Then she describes her opponent, Senator Jim Risch, showing newspaper clippings about his wealth and how he made himself a multimillionaire and became one of the richest members of the Senate. An old story. I'm Mark Trahant.
You can follow Mark Trahant and Native Issues at IndianCountryToday.com.
I'm Bill Thomas, Director of Radio at Prairie Public. Public radio has always been a community effort, and that's especially true in difficult times. Your support allows us to keep you connected with trusted local news that you need to help navigate this crisis. We're covering COVID-19 with a series of interactive town halls, as well as our daily reporting on how the crisis is impacting North Dakota. As some members are forced to reduce their support, it's crucial for the viability of Prairie Public that those who can still continue to support it. If you value Prairie Public, especially now, and your means allow, please add to your monthly sustaining membership. A rising tide can lift all boats, and your added monthly funds can help make up the difference for those who can't give right now. Please visit prairiepublic.org, click on the donate button, and pay it forward for yourself and all of the Prairie region.
We hope you've enjoyed Main Street Weekend, and we invite you to join us for Main Street Weekdays at 3 Central, 2 Mountain, right here on Prairie Public. You can also listen live online and access our Main Street podcast anytime at prairiepublic.org. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your Sunday.